There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday afternoon. Glad to have you along. A couple hours more of live local talk on your Monday. And, of course, you can reach us through the Ascension Technology text line at 343-0106. You can also use that same phone number for a phone call. Like, pick up the good old-fashioned phone and call 343-0106. In addition to the FM Talk 106.5 app has both the calling and texting feature, but it also has something called TalkBack. Lets you record a message there. You'll see a microphone icon on the front page. You press that, you record the message, it emails it to the station. We can play it back right here on this show or other shows. All right, let's talk about the next couple hours. In hour number two, Mike Bunn from Blakely Historic State Park joins us. At 12:30 today, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. A lot to talk about with the legislature on spring break this week. Woo! Spring break for the legislature. We'll talk about what comes up when they return from spring break. But as we start some of the breaking news stories going on right now, of course, you heard the national news update there. A Nashville school shooting. This from Fox News Channel says three students have been killed and the shooter is dead. First responders in Tennessee are on the scene of a school shooting at the at Nashville Elementary School. Three students were killed in the attack, according to Vanderbilt Medical Center. Police say officers engaged with and killed the shooter. Covenant School is a private Christian institution for students up to the sixth grade, according to its website. More information coming in here, I guess, as they do the investigation. But they said... Metro Nashville PD confirmed the shooter's death in a statement, adding that the school was already working on reunifying parents and children a safe distance away from the Burton Hills Boulevard School. And Dalton, who has some experience in Nashville.
And they're also saying two adults in addition to the three children.
So that's new. Okay.
Three children, two adults, and the shooter dead. And so that's quite the number.
So were those two, did they say were they were teachers? Or
they haven't revealed yet how those adults were associated with the school or whether or not it was law enforcement who responded to the scene. Looks like that Covenant Presbyterian Church, a fire station directly beside it. So I'm not sure if they were able to get there quicker because of that. But this is a spot south of Nashville. It's kind of the Green Hills area of Nashville. Lipscomb University is right around there in that region. And the Bluebird Cafe, which people may know that show Nashville, it's based, that's kind of the where they're based out of, Nashville, Bluebird Cafe, but not directly inside the city of Nashville, but just south of it. But an awful story from there. So far, they've confirmed, three children, I guess, two adults, and the shooter is dead.
Is anything there? I looked at, is the shooter, they just say the aggressor and the shooter, was that active shooter a student?
I haven't seen a report of whether or not it was an active student. It was, they do say the shooter was engaged by police and reported dead. So I'm not sure if the shooter killed themselves or whether they were killed by law enforcement, but not a whole lot of information about the fatalities and who they were and what they were in relation to the school yet.
Well, the update there, Dalton, I appreciate that. Hang out here for a second. Also, coming in from WPMI, law enforcement officers are at the scene of a shooting at a tire shop in Theodore. This coming in just about an hour ago. It said shots fired near the 3000 block of Hamilton Boulevard. If we get more details on that, we'll pass that along as well. And then the story that had so many people over the weekend just... Well, yeah, I think most of us felt like that reporter y'all were playing the audio from today, who just said a prayer for the people in Amory, Mississippi, You know, it was, I think so many of us are just saying a prayer for the people in that track of the tornado.
Yeah, no doubt. And that was a really human moment that he had, and where you could tell as he was looking at the radar signature, and this was, I believe, after that dangerous storm rolled through Rolling Fork.
It had already gone through Rolling Fork.
And so he saw whatever that rotation was, that signature on the screen, and it looked like more destruction was headed towards that little spot. And he just, like you said, he said a prayer right there on the air. It just took a couple seconds, but it was notable for sure. And devastation, I guess that's a really poor part of not just Mississippi, but the entire country. Serious devastation. And Britt Williamson was a pastor. I saw yesterday morning he was on Fox and Friends, whatever their Sunday morning version of the show was. And according to him, this could have been much, much worse, as bad as it already was.
Yeah, here's so just to explain, we'll come back here. Britt Williamson is one of the people I've called this morning personally, and he may be on with us, may not today or tomorrow. But yeah, this is that what he had to say.
It's total devastation. It's wreckage like I've never seen. It's only a miracle of God that there are not hundreds of fatalities in our town and in our area. It's houses leveled, houses completely destroyed. Businesses, the majority of the businesses in our small town are completely destroyed.
That they are. So to begin this discussion, I know there are other places in Mississippi, Okolona and Amory and all these places that got damage, and their stories are important. Rolling Fork is important because I have friends there. So Rolling Fork is a, you've probably seen lots of the video or the drone video of Rolling Fork, Mississippi. And now National Weather Service in Jackson is saying the preliminary EF4 rating for that could be up to 200 mile per hour winds. Oof. And as Dr. Bill will tell you, not just we think about 200 mile per hour winds, and we think about it maybe in a hurricane aspect, but the twisting motion of a tornado, that, I mean, 200 mile per hour straight line winds are devastating. With rotation, it's even worse. That, you know, it's a magnifier. It would get Dr. Bill on at some point to talk to us about that, how it works. But I have friends in Rolling Fork, Mississippi, and got to hear their voices, which made me smile. But let me tell you about this town. So, and you could read up. It's the county seat of Sharkey County, Mississippi. It's in the Mississippi Delta. It's north of Vicksburg by about, depends on how fast you're driving on Highway 61. But let's say when you come across the Yazoo River there, probably another 20 to 30 minutes into Rolling Fork, you pass onward and carry these towns going up through the Mississippi Delta. It's a small town. It's the county seat. But got to remember, the Mississippi Delta, if you look at population maps, the Mississippi Delta is not highly populated. It's, it's got small towns, but that's it. I mean, like Greenville and Greenwood are two of the big, Greenville's one of the bigger cities around there, and it's not that big.
Yeah.
So Rolling Fork's 1,800 or so people. But it's a place I spent a lot of time over the years, and like I said, have friends and connections there, and maybe some of those people, I'm still looking at the phone, will be on with us here. But I have talked to my people there in Rolling Fork, and as people want to give back and help, I have specific ways, because, we always worry about navigating, there's a tragedy, and then scamsters come out and all that. So I know the people we're talking about. I sat in a duck blind with the people we're talking about. I've eaten dinner at their houses, the people we're talking about. So we got people we can trust. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit and give you some places to make donations. And I encourage you to. These are great folks. It is a small town, but it's one that is. So in the conversation, I've seen the drone flyovers and the reporters. But to talk to my friends that live there and go through the landmarks of this town, places I've stood, places that were just, part of the city fabric. They're just gone. Mm. Like I said, well, I'm looking at some of the video, looking at some of the destruction. Is it, is the roofs off? And they said, there's places like this central in town in Rolling Fork was a place called Chuck's Dairy Bar. Okay, Chuck's Dairy Bar. And that's where everybody gathered up. And you could get ice cream and stuff, but you can get, lunch and dinner and all that in there. And it's a cinder block building, seemingly well-built cinder block. Is gone. They found a menu. Here's a little thing that hasn't made national news. They found a menu 100 miles away to the northeast on the track from Chuck's Dairy Bar. You hear these stories about tornadoes carrying things long distances. They found this menu 100 miles away there. The homes are, one of my friends I was talking to today, he said, okay, Sean, from when you come in, because Highway 61 runs up through Rolling Fork, right? It's the main drag up through. And he said, a little fringe on the south part of town and a little fringe on the north part of town are just a little bit of damage are okay. He said, the entire rest of the 90% of the town is gone. He had to get off a track hoe long enough to talk to me. They've got dozers and track hoes, and they're working, trying to get cars cleared and roads open and you know, open up signs of houses that have collapsed and looking for people. I think the death toll, unfortunately, probably will rise, right, as they're now in this search effort going on, trying to find people that might have had a home collapse on them, still be in there. It's gigantic damage to some very poor communities too, very poor folks in the Mississippi Delta, and they didn't have much. They had their homes, and they don't have that now. And I know that we, as people here along the Gulf Coast, understand what it's like to get the damage. People in Alabama understand the tornado damage. Speaking of which, now this is anecdotal, but I heard a Weather Channel reporter say, who had been on the scene in during the Tuscaloosa tornadoes, and who said he thought the damage was worse. Now, that I'm not making up, that's him talking, you know, just saying it looked worse.
Yeah, I think I had seen, and maybe I'm wrong, if you know, let me know on the text line, but I think this was the highest number of fatalities from a tornado since that day when that tore through Tuscaloosa, and then there were some other fatalities in other storms that day back in 2011. But since then, we haven't seen this number of people die from a tornado. And you, like you said, the destruction, I can't remember how wide they said this thing was, but an EF4, that's not something you see every day. And like that pastor said, Williamson, he's surprised that it wasn't much worse than it was. So they almost, more lives could have been lost if they hadn't been so fortunate.
But. Yeah, they're talking to my friends today. They're kind of slack-jawed about that. They're like, we don't know why there aren't more people dead, but God bless her. And we're going to come back, talk more about their stories that I've heard firsthand, and how to help, because there's going to be a bunch of things pop up here, but how do you know you directly help the people? And my friends, specifically, I'm asking you, in Rolling Fork and Anguilla, Mississippi, right there together. Be right back.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 1222 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all here on this Monday. My friend Dalton Norwig in studio with me too, as we're trying to keep up with the multiple stories out of Nashville, that pressure going on right now with Nashville police giving an update. And you and I just heard the same thing, that is, now they're saying 3 children and 3 adults killed in this, and then the shooter. But they also said that this is something you don't hear very often, but didn't we? They said the shooter was a woman?
A female, yeah. They said a woman. So I don't know if it was a student female or an adult woman. You know, earlier there were reports 3 children, 2 adults, and the shooter is dead. Now they're saying 3 children and 3 adults. So I don't know if it was an adult female shooter that did this or what, but those details just starting to roll in. And I know Marsha Blackburn, she's saying, hey, if you're not family, if you're not law enforcement, then just stay away from this area right now while they figure everything out. This is right beside Hillsborough Pike, just south of Nashville, right the Green Hills area of Nashville where this happened. Covenant Presbyterian Church. Looks like it's a middle school that's attached to that church, Covenant School.
It goes up to 6th grade, I think. Yeah, they said. And we'll get to talking more about the Mississippi tornadoes as well. Jerry in Fort Morgan said, I've lived and worked in Valley Park. Now, Valley Park right there is very close to Rolling Fork, and places like Onward, Cary, and Valley Park. These are all small towns as you come up 61. So if you would leave Vicksburg and turn on 61, you come up, you cross the Yazoo River, and these towns are just along the road, farming communities, as you head to Rolling Fork, where we see this damage. This is me doing some country math. So we're trying to decide the width of the tornado. Now, understand, it's not going to be perfect because it's going to be on an angle, right? That tornado angling from southwest to northeast. But by the description from my friends this morning that lived there, the areas that didn't get the major impact. They basically said it was bookended, like the very north end of Roland Fork and very south end did not get the majority of the damage. This is, once again, just sampling here. It's about a mile. It's about a mile width.
Oh my
goodness.
Now,
we'll see, you know, if they come measure it. But that's me looking at some maps and trying to figure where he told me where the school was and where this, you know, I'm just, you know, just finger in the air trying to figure this out. A mile.
That's incredible. And they're saying it went for 59 miles.
This thing was tracking to the northeast after, yeah.
So about a mile wide, ran for 59 miles, and at speeds of 166 to 200, those winds.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And with the twisting motion that makes those even worse. So, Jerry, Valley Park, I know the place as well. David says, let's see, Kosciuszko, Mississippi, where my family's from, did not get hit over the weekend, but it's not very far drive from where the devastation is. Yeah, and you got places like Oklahoma and up Amory and all that. And which, by the way, I got this note here. I've been over the weekend talking to Lori Miles with the Mobile County Sheriff's Department, and her latest update here, they have left now. You know, they got the food truck where they, you know, go feed the first responders mm-hmm. so they can get their work done. They left yesterday with the food truck. They're going to be in Monroe County. So Monroe County, Mississippi is where Mobile County Sheriff's Office, they have the food truck, and they staff it with deputies. They're going up there to help. Oh, yeah, and you know what? Thank you. Supermom says on the text line, Chuck's Dairy Bar got all their employees in their freezer second before the tornado hit. Their timing was impeccable. That little town is just gone. So, Supermom, I'm talking to my friend. That's what he said. I said, what about, we went, you know, the Napa store. We called the parts house there and the lumber yard and all that. He said, gone. I said, the motel where I used to stay, gone. Gas station, actually, gone. I said, what about Chuck's Dairy Bar there? And he said, nothing but, so you're spot on. He said, nothing but the freezer and some rubble and some cars laid on it.
Oh, my goodness.
And this was like, you know, this be the size of, Chuck's would be, although it wasn't like in a strip mall by itself, but like Iron Skillet is in Citronelle, that kind of size place, you know, brick building, cinder block there, and just gone.
And symbolic of what kind of town that is, right?
Yeah.
Or was.
Yeah.
That everyone would go there. That's like the lunch spot or whatever. It's so many towns around here that are exactly mm-hmm. the same, that everyone knows everyone. And that sounds like that's the case here.
Yeah.
It's absolutely devastating. There is some more information out on this Nashville shooting now with this presser that's going on. So according to spokesperson for Nashville PD, a female shooter on the second level of the school was firing and was fatally shot by a five-member team. So two law enforcement opened fire.
So it was a female.
A female shooter, and they believe it was a teenage female shooter, and had entered a side entrance with two assault rifles and a handgun. And Don Aaron, the spokesperson, said seven total people, including the shooter, were confirmed dead. So three adults, three children. And what they're saying right now is a female teen shooter that entered the school.
All right. I want to say this before we go to the break here, and I will have this information so you can text me or email me, and I'll pass along. So the best donation to do now, and this is the tax-deductible one. So, and I know these people, so this is not, you know, just, you know, something online, which I hope they get an online thing. But right now I talked to the guys today. They said, well, we don't have online. The thing is, mailing it, you have to mail it here because they said the post office is gone.
Wow.
Nobody has mailboxes anymore except for up in Anguilla, which is just north of Roland Fork. So the First Baptist Church of Roland Fork, Britt Williamson's church, who you heard the clip from, First Baptist Church of Roland Fork, you send it to there, and I can pass this along in text or email. First Baptist Church of Roland Fork, in care of the Bank of Anguilla, and that's P.O. Box 188, Anguilla, Mississippi, 38721. But I can give this to you in an email or a text. Once again, this is where they're taking the donations. If you want to just make it, because, I mean, my people there are, you know, they're regular folks. They just said, well, they can send a check. I said, any way else to do it? He said, right now, they don't have internet. They don't have, you know. But that is the First Baptist Church of Roland Fork, in care of the Bank of Anguilla Tornado Relief Fund, if you want to put it to that. It's P.O. Box 188, Anguilla, Mississippi, 38721. Also talked to them about donations for, they said, prepaid Walmart cards or prepaid Visa cards. He said they got plenty of water already. He said, Sean, I'm looking at pallets of water. We got water, but like toiletries, those kind of things. The people lost everything there. And we'll talk to them this week and get their stories to you firsthand. And I know we as a community will step up and help those folks in Roland Fork and elsewhere in Mississippi. All right, coming right back. It's Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Phone number, the text line, both 343-0106. Also, you can send us one of those talkback messages using the FM Talk 106.5 app. Just press the microphone icon on the front page of the app, you know, where you're streaming and see it like the main landing page, I think they call it. If you press that, you can record a message or email it to us right here at the station. All right, without further ado, our friend, host of Capital Journal and the man behind Alabama Daily News, the crowd goes wild for Todd Stacey. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. Well, it's spring break for the legislature. So does it mean it's spring break for Capital Journal?
Well, actually, yes, because so normally during the session we have a show every single night, and that's we're just covering whatever happened in the legislature that day. It doesn't really make sense to have a nightly show when the legislature is not in town. So we'll be back Friday with our week in review, which will probably be more of a weekend preview.
Yeah. So that's right.
A little bit of a break for us, too. I mean, we're still working, but it's nice to have a little bit of a breather.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the week in review, that week that was last week. You did this, of course, on Capital Journal on Friday. You talked to State Finance Director Bill Poole about the budget. And talk about that process that, you know, the governor presents her budget. I've talked about it at the federal level, too. There's, you know, the president will produce their budget, and then the legislature does what the legislature is going to do. Is it the same at the state level?
Oh, yeah, that's right. And probably, you know, it's a little bit more cohesive in a lot more cohesive in the state. Now, it didn't used to be. I mean, back when I worked in the Riley administration and there was a Democratic legislature, you know, the governor's required by the Constitution to submit their budget the second day of session. And then, back then, they would essentially just throw it in the trash and start their own, which I think is pretty much what happens in Congress. But these days, it's a lot more cohesive. They are communicating the entire time between the legislature and the governor's office, the finance office. I would say that whatever they end up, you know, at a budget in, say, April or May of this year, it probably won't be too far off from where the governor started. And you can kind of see that sort of lined up and on the spreadsheets and everything. Of course, there will be changes. I expect this whole tax rebate thing to really get a lot of scrutiny, and that the jury's still not out on that idea. But it's a lot closer in terms of budget levels and how much money we want to spend versus how we want to save. I think most of those are going to be about the same.
Well, the fact that in the rebate plan being one thing the governor talked about, she didn't talk about, even though I think Lieutenant Governor did, talk about the, you know, my perennial favorite, any kind of change to the grocery tax. Mm-hmm. Is it, I mean, I heard more chatter from legislators before they went into session about it, but now if the governor didn't have it in her budget, is there a chance that it can be forced in there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it takes passing a bill. Of course, it takes accounting for it in the budget. Right. And that's no small thing. And I've fallen into the trap of sort of juxtaposing these two against each other, either an income tax rebate or a grocery tax. They're actually not even related at all. It's starting to kind of be like that. And that's maybe my more observation than anything else. But, you know, the tax rebate as proposed is about $1 billion. You're single, you get $400. You're married and got kids, you get $800. One time. That's it. One check, and we're done. Obviously, with reducing or eliminating the sales tax on groceries, that's in perpetuity. That's forever, or as long as that law exists. And so it's not just $1 billion this year. It's probably more like $500 to $600 million, not just this year, but next year and every year. And so you're trying to account for can we afford, you know, from $500 to $600 million from the education budget every year? And if not, do you replace it with something else? And so that's really where the fault lines are. And I think after the break, you're going to see a lot more detailed proposals come out on that. You know, you've got like Andrew Jones, Senator Andrew Jones from Gadsden, who's working with Representative Penny McClammy from here in Montgomery, Republican and Democrat working together. Their thing is sort of adjusting the federal tax deduction that we all enjoy, and helping that account for some of the money. There are other sort of similar proposals, but that's what it comes down to. The one-time tax rebate is kind of easy because there's this money sitting there. It's one-time money. It's a one-time rebate, so you're done. Grocery tax is a lot more complicated because it's in perpetuity.
And yes, which, you know, it's my thought that makes a bigger difference long term, but yeah, we'll see what happens when they get back.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I agree with you. I think to me that, and if you're a Republican, I think Will Ainsworth spoke to this, it's a permanent tax cut, and over time probably means a lot more than that $400 or $800 one-time check.
Big time. Big time. And it's a, you know, it's everybody gets the same cut. Everybody's got to eat. They buy groceries. Everybody gets the same cut. But it has a magnified effect among working poor in Alabama, the people we want to encourage. They're doing it right. It's not federal, you know, it's not on federal assistance. It's people that are, you know, going to the grocery store, and that extra $20 or $30 in a month could be huge. Be huge to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do expect to see more talk of this. Now, look. Again, they're not mutually exclusive. These two plans are not mutually exclusive. But let's just say that that eliminating the sales tax on groceries got real legs and it started to get some momentum. I think if that was the case, you might see a chilling effect on the rebate idea just from the standpoint of like, okay, if we're going to do this permanent sales tax cut, then maybe let's not go whole hog on this rebate and find some ways to save it, you know, for the future. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
So, I mean, that's a tell with your kind of, for people to understand through, you know, your lens there watching Montgomery, that if we stop hearing about so much of the tax rebate discussion, maybe a sign that the grocery tax reduction could happen.
Maybe. And another part of this, Mary and I talked about this on our latest podcast, is that, like, you're also not going to please everybody with the rebate. I got a call from a lady the other day who, you know, she's on disability, right? So she doesn't file taxes. That means she wouldn't get a rebate. You know, there's plenty of people like that are going to be mad that they didn't get a rebate. So you're never going to please everybody with something like that. I think like we've talked about, the wisest choice is to do the most good for the biggest impact, and I think that's why you're starting to see more towards permanent sales tax on groceries.
And I want to revisit that with another discussion here, but before we do, I know you had made a note here that on the Week in Review, you also talked to Director Poole about the prison construction plan. I'm left scratching my head. I mean, I realize I buy groceries, I buy building product, I see inflation, I get it, but that's a lot of inflation.
I pressed him on it.
50%?
I pressed him on it. It's no small thing. I mean, it's going up more than $300 million, like $340 million, the price of this one prison that was supposed to be in the neighborhood of $700 million. Now it's going to be closer to $1 billion. And so, you know, what happened was the state finance board that governs these things basically authorized the state to spend that much more money. He said inflation was a problem, but I pressed him on it a little bit to get more. And he said that the design essentially got more expensive. They're trying to respond to this whole federal government mandates and whatnot and build more cellular rather than dormitory. But I was kind of confused because I thought that was the design all along. And so the big question I had, and I encourage you to watch and your listeners to watch what I said, was like, because he starts out saying, look, this is something the state has to do. There's a law, and which he's correct. There is a law, and they have to build these prisons and spend this money. But my fear is that when companies out there know that, when construction companies know that you have no choice but to spend this money, it puts them in the advantage
Sure.
The catbird seat of saying, like, oh, by the way, this just got more expensive for you. And so he was, you know, gracious to answer that and go along with that, and it was honest. He said there will be some opportunities for cost savings moving forward through some lower subcontracting bids. I certainly hope so, because that's my fear. If you're the construction company that was chosen, oh, by the way, I get to charge $300 million extra than we didn't expect. That's a bit of a sticker shock for Joe taxpayer.
Yeah, it's huge. And the design thing, I may show my ignorance here, but you know, we have been talking about what the DOJ required for a long time. This didn't just come up. So did they not have the plan? I mean, they knew the parameters of the build, right? Before we got started with this, when even not going way back, but I mean, when Governor Ivey moved out to try to do that, you know, build, lease, plan and all that stuff, we had a plan then, didn't we? We had.
Yeah. And so I think that's part of the problem here. And I've expressed this not just to Mr. Poole, but to Senator Greg Allbritton, who, you know, it was a big part of that prison plan going forward. It's like, you know, I understand. It seems like it would be wiser to me to kind of have, I don't know, don't overshoot your landing. Like, mm-hmm. they said it was going to be this much, and oh, they're going to come back and move the goalposts to way more. I'd rather be pleasantly surprised by lower costs than shocked by almost, you know, 50% cost increase. So why not do that? Why, you know, were they concerned at the beginning that, oh, well, we can't save $1 billion because then, you know, I just really hope it's all on the up and up. It was really a sticker shock. If it is for me, I know it is for a lot of others.
Yeah. I mean, once again, y'all, it's not. Not that 5% is okay when you're talking about this money, but, you know, we get so used to that. But 50%, I mean, you really missed the mark on that one.
Right. And how does that happen? How do you not account for, I mean, how do you, that any home builder would say, what?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're building a home, you would say to your home builder, what are you talking about? And absolutely not. So that's my concern, can the state be aggressive enough to say to actually keep down costs on these things? And remember, this is just the one prison in Elmore County. We haven't even gotten to the
Escambia,
Escambia County facility.
Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey, Capital Journal and Alabama Daily News. Okay, I thought about this when we talked about grocery tax. So the leading conservative voice in the House is House Minority Leader Anthony Daniels. You talked to him about tax. This is a Democrat, y'all. Y'all talked about tax cuts on groceries and overtime income. He sure sounds like a fiscal conservative to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty interesting because, his biggest proposals this year are grocery tax reduction, which he's got a novel kind of plan for. He's going to be one of the lead sponsors on these economic incentive legislation, right? But he also wants to eliminate income tax on overtime work, right? So if mm-hmm. you work time and a half overtime, that would not be taxed by the state, which, I know a lot of guys that would love that.
Yep.
But again, these are two tax cuts that are the Democrats' biggest, maybe not biggest, but certainly most viable bills this session. So yeah, that is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's leading the way on that. All right, and Todd, when they get back from spring break, where do you see them? What's leading? What do you expect to see them get into first?
Well, we're all waiting on these economic development incentive bills to drop. I sort of expected them before now. Again, we've got two laws that are about to expire. The Alabama Jobs Act. That's the one that was used to get some of our biggest, industrial recruits over in recent years, the Mazda, Toyotas. I think some of it was used for Airbus. So the real, big dogs. And then the Growing Alabama Act, which is more geared toward helping local areas develop like industrial sites so they can recruit. So both of those are expiring this year. And so they're in need of reauthorization. But instead of just rubber stamping them, I think the legislature is going to make some significant revisions. That's the whole point. That's why they expire every 5 years, is for the legislature to kind of force the legislature to modernize them. What do we need to do to compete with other states? So I expect those bills to drop. You might see as many as four bills actually dealing with the different areas of economic development. I don't think it's going to be like a hugely controversial issues, but you might have some small differences of opinion about what all those tweaks need to be. But yeah, I expect that to be first up when we get back.
All right. Well, tell folks, of course, about Capital Journal on when the legislature is in session, and also Alabama Daily News that is always in session.
We're always in session. So yeah, if you don't get the daily news already in your inbox, you're missing out. It's the best way to keep up with what's going on in the state and in Washington. It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com, click to sign up right there on the webpage. You'll be on the list. And yes, Capital Journal, our nightly shows go away this week just because it's spring break. There's nothing to report from the State House. But we'll be back on Friday with our weekly show, and next Monday, nightly coverage of the Alabama Legislature, 10:30 on Alabama Public Television.
Great stuff as always, Todd. I appreciate you. We'll talk next week.
All right, Sean. Be good.
All right. There he is, Todd Stacey, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:54, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Run through some text here and then an update out of Nashville as well. So Paul, first up here, says on the prison story, he said, sounds like they paid off a crony for a bad sight. Corruption. Paul, did you hear what Todd said? He said that Director Poole, when he was on, said it's because of the implementation of design. Well, we've been on this story the whole time, right? I mean, I started talking about this when Bentley was still in office. And Senator Cam Ward had been on with it so many times. They had, and then the governor, remember when she was going to do it on her own without the legislature and do it through the executive branch? They had the design at that point. So I don't understand how... Oh, you want us to build it this way? So not just, I hear what you're saying, Paul, and the questions about the land up there, but this is about the build. It's not even, and to say this is just inflation. Well, inflation's a thing. Believe me, we're all living with it. It's not 50%, though. I think it's, and the idea of people coming in and bidding contracts, you see it a lot of times in government contracts. I see it at a federal level, right? They'll bid very low, but then there's, for all these other reasons, it ends up costing even more than the other bids that they beat, right? Keep an eye on this one. I am. Larry and Daphne says, even California doesn't have a grocery tax. Listen, other than, there's two or three states left that have some tax on groceries, even if it's not full freight, we're one of them. And I want to point out, too, that with deference to Democrat, House Minority Leader Anthony Daniels, he's the one that's talking more fiscal conservatism than the rest of them in the House that I've heard. Tim says, Sean, I hate it for the lady that's not going to get the rebate because she doesn't pay taxes. Well, that's what's wrong with the Social Security and a lot of government programs. You got people that are drawing benefits that didn't pay their fair share in. Right. But this goes back to my obsession with what's happening in France. I haven't even checked in on them over the weekend. The situation there showing that they moved their retirement age by 2 years to try to save their pension plan, right? Le pension or whatever. They moved that, and I mean, there were a million people in the streets in France about it. If you try to change anything, Tim, on even though the actuarial tables tell you Social Security is going bankrupt, even though we have money for other things, if you start saying who can be in and who can't be out, then when do you, I agree, Tim, I agree with you in spirit of it. But if you say, okay, starting today, you had to put money in. I mean, where do you draw the line? Can you go back? Can you do revision on it without having politics take over? I worry that you can't. More updates here out of Nashville. As Dalton and I were talking earlier, now they're saying six total killed including three students and three adults. The shooter's dead. Police confirmed that the shooter was a female. Now, that is a rare, rare thing. If you look back to, I don't know, somebody Google that. Mass shootings had a female as a shooter. I don't know that I remember one. I might have missed one, but they said it was a female who appeared to be in her teens. First, it's from Fox News, said first responders in Tennessee are on the scene of the school shooting in Nashville Elementary School, although I thought it was a middle school. Three students and three adults were killed. This is what happens when stories are new. Three students and three adults were killed in the attack. And the shooter identified as female, who appeared to be a teenager, carrying two, and this is what they write, assault-type rifles and a handgun. The female, who's yet to be identified, killed three students and three adults before being killed by police just before 10:30 this morning. All right, we'll get more updates here with the national news. Coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile on the way.